Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week two of the 2025 college football season has come and gone, and what a weird week this was. There's a lot to react to, so we'll be diving into what you should be taking away from the week two action through a college fantasy lens. We'll first talk about how much you should be freaking out about some of those highly valued players you have, then look at some waiver wire players to avoid, and then we'll get to a brand new set of players to add from the waiver wire, the thing you guys want to hear about the most. All of that and more coming right after this.
Sellers picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching to the end zone. Touchdown! What a start!
Give it to Reed, and there he goes! Nobody's gonna catch him! Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. Hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. You can also find us live on our YouTube page at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live on Tuesday nights. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. If you play it, then we've got content, whether it's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use the promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y. You can't do that, totally fine. You can show us some love just by leaving a like, a comment, a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a five-star review. Make sure you follow the show. Not only does that show us support, but also shows the game of college fantasy football in general a ton of support. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. Y'all, week two has come and gone. And wild, wild week. It was one of those weekends where, of course, we're all saying headed into the weekend. We didn't want to say it out loud. It's too early in the season for us to be sitting there being like, oh, what a rough weekend of games we got coming up. But we were all kind of silently thinking it, right? Like, we were looking at, you know, so many Power 4 teams playing, you know, G5 or FCS teams. It just looked like blowout central. There's a couple of good, you know, Power 4 versus Power 4, G5 versus G5 matchups. But in terms of the grand, you know, overall schedule, it didn't really look like it was going to amount to much. But boy oh boy, the few, you know, games where, you know, you were playing like competition, you know, Power 4 versus Power 4, G5 versus G5, we got some real good bangers. That SMU Baylor game was awesome. Obviously, the Mizzou Kansas game was great. Michigan Oklahoma was good for a really long time. Like, those games delivered. And then, of course, we got the big surprise ones, right? Like South Florida beating Florida at Florida. Like, that was obviously a wild one. And then, you know, fantasy matchups were just all over the place, right? Because we had so many lopsided matchups, it was really difficult to know exactly what you're going to expect out of any given matchup. And I'm sure you guys felt that all day long. And then, I don't know about you guys, I thought I was headed for a really, really good weekend in terms of a win-loss record in my fantasy matchups, and then all of a sudden I lost like three matchups because of the late-night heroics of Jonah Coleman and Pafele Ashlock. If you guys also lost yours, make sure you leave a comment down below, and I'll be sure to hug it out with you guys, because boy, those are some rough ways to lose, right? You go to bed thinking you're all right, you wake up, and all of a sudden, you know, Pafele Ashlock's put up, you know, 125 yards and two touchdowns, and you know your week's over. But it also feels so dang good, because that really makes it feel like CFF is truly back and underway. Anyway, I'm rambling long enough here, y'all. You guys, if you've been here, if you've been around in seasons past before, you know kind of the drill here. For those of you who are just joining us this season and just need a quick reminder, basically, this is our reaction and waiver wire show. It is split up into usually four segments. We're going to do three tonight. I'll explain why in a second. But tonight, we'll be heading up the freakout scale segment. That is me, Chris K, and Nate giving you guys a rating 1 to 10 on how much you should be freaking out over some of those highly valued players you have. Then we will be discussing some players to avoid on the waiver wires. You know, if you're just looking at, you know, who scored the highest this past week, you'll know not to pick up some of these guys. And then the meat of the show is going to be geared towards the guys you should be picking up. And there are quite a few, especially in the wide receiver department. Once again, we got a lot of great options. So with all that being said, I think, is there anything else I really want to talk about? Again, I kind of mentioned at the top of the show, just a reminder for everybody. Again, we are doing two shows per week still. The waiver wire show is the same as always. But again, the start sit shows, for those of you who are just tuning in at this point in the season, they're done differently this year. We're doing a live show at on Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Kind of similar in the way in terms of, like, you know, I'm still taking start sit questions. I answer them live, but it's very much more of a back and forth. You guys are all there asking questions in the chat, and I try to get to them as quickly as I can. It's a good time. Y'all should absolutely join us, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday nights. That being said, once again, I will say I have rambled long enough. Let's go ahead and get on to it. Let's start with our freakout scale segment. Our four players chosen by our NIL tier over at the Campus of Canton Discord were, once again, Mekhi Hughes. We need to discuss the much higher freakout scale rating that all of us are giving him this week. And then we got Lenore Sellers. A lot of people wanted to know about him this week. And then we also have two Clemson players that we'll be discussing in Cade Klubnik and TJ Moore. But again, let's start with Mekhi Hughes, running back out of Oregon. Yeah. Last week, I think all three of us, between Nate, Chris, and I, we were all in kind of the 2 to 4 range. We were all kind of buying what Dan Lanning was putting out there, saying, you know, basically treating this like a preseason NFL game. We know what he is. We wanted to get the younger guys out there and everything. And we're saying, okay, you know, they got Oregon State this week, even though they should beat Oregon State handedly, in which, by the way, they did, more than handedly. We should see him get a lot more run in that game. And then we didn't. They started Noah Whittington again, which I kind of get, right? Like, Noah Whittington has been with Oregon for a long time. He's a favorite of the running backs coach there. Like, I can understand a little bit of Whittington's, you know, getting first snaps a lot of times. But we still didn't see Mekhi Hughes hardly until the fourth quarter. Again, he can give me this thing all day long of like, oh, well, we blew him out, so why even risk Mekhi Hughes for down the line and everything, right? But it's still concerning that 2 weeks in a row that we're basically seeing Mekhi Hughes be the fourth or even fifth running back off the bench for the Ducks. Now, I'm willing to buy that that's not the case the full season, but that's why I've got this rated at an 8. Like, for, again, just a quick reminder, again, the scale, the freakout scale, for those listening to the podcast, if you don't see it on the video format here, it's a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is start with confidence. Don't even worry about it. 10 is just drop them. I've got Mekhi Hughes rated as an 8. I don't think there's any world where you can confidently start Mekhi Hughes until you see him actually do it. I can understand the people who want to just hold on at least a week or two more, especially if you have a deeper roster. Like, I totally get that, but I don't think there's any way, shape, or form that you can start him. Thinks that he's got it at a 6. Nate's just straight done with this. He says full 10, drop that full. There's no reason to have Mekhi Hughes on your roster at this point. Again, I'm of the personal opinion that, no way I could start him at all until I see him have a big game as the, even if it's just the RB2 for Oregon, I could take that. But again, this whole thing of not seeing him until, like, you know, the third, fourth quarter is extremely, extremely worrying. So yeah, Hughes, big trouble. And for me, that basically confirms going into the future that I will not be drafting any G5 to Power 4 players or transfer players in the first round of drafts moving forward. Because this was a scenario that felt so set up so well. Oregon needed a new top running back. Noah Whittington has been great the last couple of years. He wasn't really a guy that you pictured being like a lead back, even in a committee. Hughes, coming off two back-to-back seasons at Tulane, looked like a guy that could translate really well to the Power Four. Going to a place like Oregon that has really worked well with running backs the last couple years, it seemed like everything was set up, and now we're dealing with this. And I put a tweet out about that, and I got a little bit of pushback, especially from Shane Hallam, who's super smart. Let me be very clear about that. He and I can disagree on this, and you know, he's super smart, and you should absolutely check out his content. He does a lot of great NFL draft content. But he basically was saying that, like, well, you know, you shouldn't write off all G5 to Power 4 guys in the future, because look at Ahmad Hardy. Ahmad Hardy's doing really well right now, and he is 100% right. Ahmad Hardy is doing really well. I just think, like, when you're drafting, right, especially in CFF drafts, it's so much different than the NFL, right, in fantasy. Because NFL fantasy, things are so set in stone. You know roughly exactly when to pick certain guys and what rounds and everything. Everything's pretty much laid out for you because there's so much data that goes into everything. College fantasy is still the Wild West, right? So you have first-round busts every single year, second-round busts, third-round busts. Especially those first couple of rounds, your biggest thing is... What's the old saying, right? Like, the old fantasy saying is that, like, you can't win your league in the first round, but you can sure lose it. To me, based on what we've seen in the last couple of years, drafting G4 or G5 to Power 4 transfers in the first couple of rounds is a very, very risky proposition, right? Like, again, there's so much that can go wrong. Like, yes, Ahmad Hardy's doing well, but even Ahmad Hardy, right, he's splitting carries with Jamal Roberts. It's just they're running the ball so dang well that it doesn't really matter. But he's not even still a clear lead back for Mizzou right now, right? Because him and Roberts are splitting so many carries. Add in Bo Prippula to that rushing mix, and, like, again, things, if that rushing volume decreases for Mizzou for whatever reason, whether it's game script or, you know, they just see a game plan where passing the ball is a lot more effective, you know, that could end up being rough for Ahmad Hardy as well. So, like, yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at. Where, like, if Hughes couldn't work out as a first-round pick, and I didn't draft a ton of them because I specifically said, I'm like, I'd much rather draft some of these other guys, especially more known commodities like Demond Claiborne, like Jonah Coleman. Guess what? They're doing great. Meanwhile, if you draft Mekhi Hughes, you're definitely not feeling too great. Let's move on to Lenora Sellers. Way less freak out on this one from our committee here on the freakout scale. K's got about a 1. K is not worried about Lenora Sellers at all. I've got him at a 3. Nate's got him at a 4. You might be wondering, if you don't have Lenora Sellers, why people might be freaking out about this. And, well, Sellers hasn't exactly had the most stellar of starts, right? Against Virginia Tech last week, 209 yards passing, a touchdown. He also had a rushing touchdown and about 25 yards on the ground. This past week against South Carolina State, they played an FCS matchup. Very, very down performance here, right? You know, 19 pass attempts, 11 completions, 128 yards and a touchdown, 23 yards rushing, no touchdowns on the ground. Finished the day with 11 points. Definitely not what you want to see from Lenora Sellers so far, but I'm not freaking out about this too much. I got him at a 3. Definitely monitor him closely. Maybe if you got good guys on your bench, you can swap them out there. But again, you can kind of explain away both of these. One, the first game against Virginia Tech, there's just a level of variance there, right? Sellers has immense upside, but he's also going to have some of these games where he only scores 20 points. Every quarterback, even the best ones outside of, like, John Mateer last year. John Mateer had a stinker game or two, right? Like, that's fine. I'm not worried about that. And then the second game was against South Carolina State. That was a game delayed by lightning and rain for a long time. It was late into the night before South Carolina actually started that game. They were up well past what they were expecting to. I imagine a lot of the players were tired. Like, South Carolina, to get started scoring, I think needed, like, what, 2 kick return touchdowns to really kind of get them on the board and everything. Everything about that game was just super sluggish. You could tell that, you know, South Carolina was just trying to get out of there and then just call it a day. There was just not really much going into that game where they really felt like, hey, we need to do anything too much here. Sellers was out of the game relatively quickly, so I'm not worried about that. I think he'll return. The one thing that does worry me a little bit, though, is that when you look at Lenora Sellers, he averaged about 4.3 yards per carry last year. Currently, so far, he's averaging just under 2.5. that's a pretty big drop from last year. And so I do think that that is something to consider. They're running him a bit, right? Like, he's averaging about 10 rush attempts per game. But we just haven't seen that rushing upside that really helped him take off last year. Maybe they're saving it. I don't know. But that is where I'm definitely sitting myself at with a three. Like, that's something to monitor. If he isn't rushing nearly as well as he was last year, his ceiling is very much capped compared to what he had last year. But for right now, if I had him, I absolutely would still start him. Let's talk about these two Clemson players. Again, let's talk about Cade Klubnik, the quarterback out of Clemson, and then TJ Moore, the wide receiver out of Clemson. Nate and Kay are relatively worried here. Nate's got it at a 5. Kay's got it at a 6. And I totally get it, right? Like, Clemson's offense through 2 weeks has not looked great. You can semi-excuse last week, right, against LSU. LSU's defense hasn't been great the last couple of years, but they had a new defensive coordinator. They've had the talent there forever. And now it seems like the pieces are finally putting put together for LSU to have a potentially elite defense this year. So I'm not going to knock Clemson for that. We also saw Clemson last year only score 6 points versus Georgia in week one and then just tear through the ACC the rest of the way, allowing Cade Klubnik to finish in the top two quarterbacks for last year. So that didn't worry me much at all. What did worry me was obviously what happened this past week, where Clemson was struggling big time against Troy, especially in the first half, right? Like, Klubnik threw a pick six, he threw interceptions, like, Clemson couldn't get on the board, and things started to look better a little bit in the second half, and I had a Clemson buddy of mine text me pointing out that it seems like, and again, it has been confirmed, it did get confirmed, because somebody said it at one of the press conferences afterwards, where Dabo called plays in the second half, and that's what helped the offense kind of get back in motion. I don't know what that means long-term for Clemson and this offense, but maybe that gets them back on track a little bit here. Again, very worrying that, like, at the end of the day, Klubnik, you know, first, second, third round pick hasn't lived up to that billing quite yet. And again, last week really should have been one of those weeks where people could have counted on him to put up some points. But all that to say, I'm at a 3. Like, I monitor closely. Again, maybe this offense really just isn't clicking. Maybe Antonio Williams going down really was, like, this huge missing piece of this offense, which, again, I doubt, because, again, they still got three good receivers in Wesco, TJ Moore, and Tyler Brown. Again, more on Moore in a second. But even so, like, I feel like they got the pieces. Again, a lot of people are like, oh, well, Clemson doesn't really have a run game. And, you know, fair. Again, they were struggling to run the ball in the first half, but second half, they got things going. So, again, maybe that was a play calling issue. Maybe they just wore the Troy defense down. I don't know. But, again, you know, Adam Randall finished the game with 76 yards or something like that. So, you know, it wasn't a complete bust in terms of their running game. So maybe things get better down the line. I have to think they will. Again, Clemson will be getting into some ACC play here. We saw last year that when they got into ACC play, it helped them out a ton. I'm willing to still believe that Klubnik turns things around there. Does this mean Klubnik probably finishes lower than he did last year? I mean, yeah, after two disappointing starts here, it's hard to imagine that he finishes in that elite CFF production again. He's not running the ball as much this year as well. Again, maybe that changes once they get into conference play. But for right now, I still think Klubnik is a startable option. You've got some really good matchups for Clemson upcoming. I say bet on it. A guy that I'm not so much willing to bet on, though, is his wide receiver, TJ Moore. TJ Moore drafted decently highly in drafts. A lot of times, he was even taken above, like, Antonio Williams in drafts, which was always kind of crazy to me. But, yeah, Moore struggling quite a bit to start the season here. You know, 8 fantasy points versus LSU, less than a fantasy point versus Troy this past weekend. It is rough for the TJ Moore fan club. And again, I don't want to turn this into an I told you so moment, but again, I look at, like, what Clemson had last year, and, you know, Wesco outperformed Moore last year, obviously Antonio Williams outperformed him last year, and a lot of people were drafting Moore as if he was going to make this huge jump this year and, you know, become the wide receiver one for Clemson, and that's just straight up not what we've seen so far. And I just didn't really expect that to happen. Like, I didn't know how he was going to leapfrog Wesco. Wesco looked so good last year. again, here we have it playing out. Wesco, 14 targets, 184 yards, and 2 touchdowns so far this year. Meanwhile, TJ Moore, 13 targets, 5 receptions, 56 yards, no touchdowns. Moore very much struggling to start the season. And, you know, maybe things get better as things kind of come along here. But I've got the freakout scale rated pretty highly here. I've got him at a 7. Again, if you're like the biggest fan of TJ Moore in the world and you really think like, oh, you know, it's variance. Like he'll put it all together this week. Like he'll have another 11 target game. He'll reel in 8 of them and he'll finish the game with 108 yards. By all means, I get it. Again, he's super talented. But at the same time, like I see 2 bad weeks in a row here on an offense that is going to spread the ball around between him, Tyler Brown, and Bryant Wesco. And Antonio Williams, whenever he comes back. Again, no official word on that yet. And so, I worry, like, again, and I have 0 TJ Moore this year, so it's hard for me to even say, like, exactly what I do, because I don't really have him too much. But, like, I couldn't start him if he was on my roster at this point. I'd definitely be looking for backup plans. I'd be looking at wide receivers. There's so many good wide receivers available that, like, I don't know. I probably would have at least grabbed one of them and they'd be starting over Moore, if not just straight up replacing him on my roster at this point. But again, things could absolutely turn around. Again, I've got him rated a 7. Nate's got him rated as an 8. Nate's like, cannot enter my starting lineup. Chris K, a little bit more optimistic. He's kind of on the side of, you know, it's a variance thing. Clemson can kind of get themselves back on track. And if they do, Moore will be a big part of that. So, that's our freakout scale for the week. Talk long enough on that. Let's go ahead and discuss some waiver wire traps for this week. So for those of you who are just tuning in and have never heard of this segment before, basically this is like the anti-waiver wire section. This is where I go and take a look at players that performed well over this week or the last week and you know, scored a lot of fantasy points. And if you were just looking at the waiver wire and just sorting by who scored the most fantasy points last week, these are the guys I will tell you, like, they look like they scored a lot of fantasy points. They are traps. They're not going to do it again. Let's start with Evan Simon, quarterback at a Temple. And I'm putting this out there because, like, Evan Simon has looked good the first couple weeks. You know, 36 fantasy points in week 1, 22.36 fantasy points last week. But there's a couple of things here. One, I don't trust a Temple quarterback. Just straight up. Like, I'm not really buying into the idea that Temple is going to be, you know, a force to be reckoned with within the American Conference. Their 2 opponents they have faced so far is UMass and an FCS opponent. It is very, very difficult to judge exactly how formidable this team is going to be. Granted, they did what they're supposed to, and, you know, if they are better than those teams, they beat them pretty soundly. But here's the other thing. Nothing about Simon's stat line tells me that this is sustainable whatsoever, right? He had 6 touchdowns on 25 attempts, 3 touchdowns on 10 attempts last week. Like, you're talking about an insane touchdown rate. So, like, what is that? 9 touchdowns on 35 pass. That's a 25.7% touchdown rate in passing. Like, that is absolutely insane. Now, granted, he'll get into games where he is going to be throwing, you know, 35 pass attempts because, you know, he'll be playing from behind and stuff like that. But he's not going to be throwing a touchdown every 4th pass, right? Like, his touchdown numbers are skewing things so, so badly right now. His efficiency numbers in terms of yards per attempt are skewing things as well. Like, you know, he's never going to throw 17.5 yards per attempt again against any opponent, let alone, you know, American competition. You know, 10 yards per attempt versus UMass, like, all of that's going to come down as the season kind of rolls along here. He's got a little bit of rushing to him, which is nice to see. But, you know, it's nothing that really to write home about too much. And again, this is rushing against FCS opponents and UMass. We didn't really see a lot of sacks. He took 2 sacks against the FCS opponent. But even still, like, he's going to appear at the top of a lot of quarterback. Like, if you could just go to the waiver wire and you sort by points scored so far this season, like, Simon will top a lot of those lists, and I will tell people, like, please don't. Second guy we'll discuss here is Jaden Nixon. God, I hate Jaden Nixon. not as a person, but just as a player and an annoyance in CFF. He derailed the Jalen Buckley hype train last year, came in and just completely outperformed the competition level in the MAC, which, again, good for him. But then instead of staying there and letting himself be this awesome, like, you know, MAC star for CFF for the next year, he decides to transfer away and ruin all the shares that people grabbed in, like, Dynasty and Keeper Leagues and stuff like that, only to go to UCF, where he created a ton of controversy in terms of, like, is it going to be him? Is it going to be Miles Montgomery? And basically drove Miles Montgomery and drove Miles Montgomery's price down, created so much uncertainty in that backfield. And then the season starts. Miles Montgomery looks really good. In fact, like, he looks like the running back one for UCF and, like, a true workhorse. And I was going into yesterday's game saying, like, all right, man, like, Montgomery's the guy. They're playing FCS opponent. He ought to get 1 to 2 touchdowns in this game. It's going to be phenomenal. And then Nixon, after doing 2 attempts for -6 yards and a reception for -4 yards, so a total of -10 yards production last week, decides to come on in here against an FCS opponent, once again taking advantage of terrible competition, and he decides to rip off 156 yards on 4 attempts and 2 touchdowns. Oh, in addition, he gets I can't remember if it was a punt return or a kick return touchdown. I think it was a kick return touchdown to start the game. And he just sucks up every touchdown opportunity, and Miles Montgomery, once again, through 2 games, is stuck sitting there with 0 touchdowns. Meanwhile, Jaden Nixon, who had negative yardage in week 1 because he's not a good running back at the Big 12 level, is sitting here now with 3 touchdowns. So, yeah, Nixon is not going to repeat that whatsoever. You're never going to see a guy get 3 touchdowns on 4 rush attempts ever again in the season, let alone ripping off 39 rush yards per attempt. Yeah, again, yeah. I'm not a big fan of Jaden Nixon at this point. He is just a super big annoyance for me. Another guy that stood out to me as a waiver wire trap is Ashton Emery, the running back for UTEP. He had himself a really nice day this past week playing against UT Martin for UTEP. 10 rush attempts, 36 yards, a touchdown on the ground. He also had 2 receptions for 20 yards and 2 touchdowns. So already you're kind of seeing the problem. 2 touchdowns on 2 receptions. That's not sustainable whatsoever. Again, you know, he had a 3rd touchdown on the ground, 3.6 yards per carry against an FCS opponent here. Like, Mr. Emery, glad you had yourself a really nice day. I'm sure you'll remember for a very long time, but we're not even sure. I forgot to look up, like, what was his snap count compared to the rest of the UTEP running back room. Y'all forgive me. My computer is being very slow today. But yeah, I mean, the week before he had 6 rush attempts for 31 yards and a touchdown there. So again, you're talking about four touchdowns total on, doing the math in my head real quick, 19 touches so far this season. So you're talking about a 20% touchdown rate in total. Like, again, there's just so much unsustainable about that. And then again, if we look at the rush attempts for UTEP so far, again, he's right next to Cam Thomas, who's not doing well in of his own right, but then Hassan Wilson's right there. Hassan Wilson's ripping off 15 yards a touch, which, again, obviously not sustainable, but you have to imagine that'll earn him more carries. Again, Emery, no go. Javon Watley, the wide receiver out of Arizona, I was a little hesitant about this because there was some talk before the season that Watley was kind of coming along in fall camp. And you could view this as confirmation that, again, he will be a big part for Noah Fifita's passing game going forward, because this past week, 5 targets, 5 receptions, 168 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Problem is, the week before against Hawaii, not a very good competition there, 3 targets, 3 catches, 38 yards, no touchdowns. So when you have this Arizona offense that really all last year just didn't look great outside of Tet McMillan, and now Tet McMillan is gone, and the first week we didn't really see, like, Arizona's offense just didn't look good again, and it takes playing an FCS opponent for them to look solid, I'm just not willing to buy that Watley is really going to be that important down the line, especially when, you know, he's 100% catch percentage so far. He's had 8 targets through 2 games. That's 4 targets per game. That's, you're asking a lot. In terms, like, I'm okay with certain guys having a lower volume if they are highly efficient. We'll get to that with some wide receivers later on. But Watley, again, 4 targets per game so far. Again, maybe that increases because of this performance this past week, but for right now, I'm not willing to buy it. And the last guy we'll talk about real quick is Taysom has Reddix, the wide receiver out of Oregon State. 16 targets, 11 receptions, 158 yards, no touchdowns. Came out of freaking nowhere with the ultimate Trent Walker line here, where you just put up a crap load of yardage and 0 touchdowns to go with it. This feels like I also just realized that the graphic is wrong. It shouldn't say his opponent last week was an FCS opponent. It should say that he played Fresno State. So that's a mistake on my part. Anyway, so again, it was impressive that he was able to put this up against, you know, Fresno State and not, you know, just like a FCS opponent or anything like that. But this to me screams like a young wide receiver breaking out in this way in a game like this. And then, you know, falters off the rest of the season, especially with Trent Walker still hanging around. And then he's that guy next. I just knocked over my cup. He's that guy next year. That's what this feels like to me. It's a bit of a gut call here, but, you know, the week before he had 4 targets, 1 reception, 16 yards. It's harder for me to believe we see a jump that big from 4 targets to 16 targets without it immediately coming crashing down the next week. I could be very wrong. So we will have to see. So that's it for the freakout scale. That's it for the post week 2 waiver traps. Let's get on over to the actual waiver wires. And again, just kind of going over a little bit in terms of like what I kind of see from a, you know, 1,000-foot perspective in terms of these waiver wire pickups. The quarterback situation on the waiver wire to me this year continues to be a strange one, because we had so many known commodities coming into this year that most of the quarterbacks who will go on to be, you know, the league winners were pretty much already drafted. And so the ones that are kind of left over on the waiver wire and free agency often to me feel more like floor plays rather than guys who could single-handedly carry you to the playoffs. But that's fine. I know that doesn't sound too exciting. But, you know, if you whiffed on QBs in your draft and you're struggling, there's plenty of guys you can pick up to kind of provide a really nice stopgap. And, you know, many years I've noticed when it comes to college fantasy teams and everything, championship rosters are often filled with quarterbacks that may not get you, you know, 35, 40 points any given week. But if they can consistently get you, you know, 20, 25, even, you know, upper 20s, consistently, that provides such a safe floor every single week and really kind of keeps your team from bottoming out in the worst way during the playoffs if your high upside guys do fall through. And so I would say a lot of today's picks very much kind of fall into that category, especially a quarterback. Today's running backs, I'll fully admit, I don't trust very much despite their good performances. At least I don't trust them compared to last week's crop, which, by the way, I will go over a lot of last week's crop, because again, a lot of those guys are still on the waiver wire. And also, Fantrax, love you, man, but this week, normally I go, you know, 30% rostered or lower, but unfortunately there seems to be a bit of funky calculations going on Fantrax's website with regard to the roster ship percentage. We're hoping to get that fixed relatively soon. So everything I talk about here today is going strictly on vibes in terms of, oh, this guy feels like he's not very owned in a lot of leagues. So, and that will require me in the honorable mentions to just repeat everybody I talked about last week, especially if they had another good performance this week. That way you just remember to go check your waiver wire, and if they're still there, awesome. If not, you know, I'm sorry. I have no clue how much guys were picked up or not picked up last week. Anyway, at wide receiver, again, we're spoiled with a ton of great options to pick up. We'll see how they perform as the weeks go on. But if your team's struggling at wide receiver, I have to say this waiver market might be the best you could possibly hope for. So, all that being said, let's get to some waivers here. Let's start with the quarterbacks, and let's start with Bishop Davenport, the quarterback out of South Alabama, played Tulane this past week. I had said before the weekend, especially on the start-sit stream, that I had my eye on the Tulane-South Alabama matchup. I thought it was potentially a very CFF-friendly matchup. You know, Davenport had a really weak week one, only putting up, you know, 13.54 fantasy points on, you know, 14 throws, 3 rush attempts, just not a ton of volume for him whatsoever. But that was against an FCS opponent. I really wanted to see what Davenport could look like when the competition was a little bit more, you know, on an even playing field. And that's exactly what we got on Saturday versus the Green Wave. And to me, at least, it did not disappoint, right? You know, Davenport didn't, you know, see any kind of crazy volume, you know, 24 pass attempts, 12 rush attempts. But I do think he performed well enough for CFF players to be excited about him once he does fully enter Sun Belt play. And, you know, defense is a lot more optional in that league. He finished the day with 231 passing yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, along with 63 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground. Really, the hope here is that Davenport can continue to look like this. Like, Major Applewhite's system over the years has kind of been up and down for quarterbacks. You know, we've seen, you know, as low as, like, you know, QB 60, 70. But his most recent endeavor with Gio Lopez made Lopez a top 30 quarterback for CFF in 2024. So the hope is that Davenport so far looks like he can be a plug and play for that system and can finish in a similar range. Obviously, if you pick up Davenport this week, you're not going to start him against Auburn. That's his upcoming schedule. But after that, zero Power 4 opponents and really nary a defense that you wouldn't feel comfortable starting him against. So if you're struggling at quarterback, I do highly recommend you take a look at Bishop Davenport here. Next guy up is a fun one because, boy, I was not kind to this man during the offseason. I made my feelings about Robbie Ashford well known this offseason. Phrases like "not a real quarterback" were thrown around pretty liberally, and I was just straight up actively rooting for Deshaun Purdy to win this job during the offseason. I felt like Purdy had the higher ceiling. I still kind of feel that way. But regardless, that didn't happen, and Ashford won this job by default because Purdy just could not take the reins of this job, did not perform well in camp. So with all that being said, like, especially learning that Ashford was just the guy by default, I just did not expect much out of him, and I was concerned about this offense just in general. So far with the receivers, I'm very much right on that point. However, through the first 2 weeks of the season, while I'm not blown away, I am pretty pleasantly surprised with how Robbie Ashford has performed so far. Like, granted, competition has been, you know, an FCS school and squeaking by a win over Kennesaw State. But if you were to tell me that Ashford would be looking at a season where so far he's averaging, you know, 200 passing yards a game and, you know, 50 yards on the ground per game, you know, that translates to, you know, 2,400 yards passing and 600 yards on the ground. Like, I'd say you're looking at a pretty CFF-relevant quarterback here if he's able to keep that up. That's the major question, though. Is he going to be able to keep that up? This is not great competition that he's faced so far. He will get a major test this week. He's going up against NC State. Ashford and the Wake Forest offense have to perform better than the 10 points they were able to put up against Kennesaw State. This is their chance to show that improvement, show that they can score on a real opponent. NC State gave up 31 points to Virginia last week. The opportunity is ripe here. The defense is very much a work in progress for NC State without Tony Gibson there to lead them. If Wake Forest can show that they can just score, whether, you know, in a win or a loss in a shootout, then I feel like CFF players will love the rest of their schedule. They actually get a very nice draw in the ACC this year outside of a date with Florida State. So if Ashford and the Demon Deacons look really good against NC State this weekend, I think Ashford is, you know, go ahead and pick him up now. And if he performs well, you already have him before everybody else tries to go and grab him. So next quarterback up here, another ACC quarterback. And that really is one of the themes of this week, is investing in quarterbacks in conferences that seem like they'll have a ton of shootout potential, like the Sun Belt, ACC here as well. And like I said, based on the ACC so far this season, defense is optional. Almost every one of their teams are giving up tons of points outside of really Clemson. I think that means the offenses are about to flourish once they all get into conference play here. And one quarterback that I really have my eye on right now is Darian Mensah. Yes, the $8 million man himself. a lot of things that I said that apply to Ashford apply here as well with regards to like Duke's schedule moving forward. Like I said, ACC play. But there are some pretty key differences here, right? Mensa, obviously compared to Ashford, nowhere near the dual threat quarterback that Ashford was. But the good news is he doesn't need to be. Mensa's passing is off to a really, really hot start this season. So far in two games, he has passed for 300 plus yards in both. And that was against two very different levels of competition, right? He had an FCS opponent week one, and then he had Illinois this past week, right? He's currently on pace for a whopping 4,338 passing yards and 30 touchdowns. That'll do for CFF. And this coaching staff knows how much they've invested in him and how relatively weak their running game is compared to him. So I think they're going to continue to let Mensa drive this offense. I think he'll continue to get ample opportunities each week. I know Eric Froton really pushes, you know, the 35 pass attempts, 35 touchdowns and everything. Mensa's absolutely in a position to be able to do that. I do question whether his efficiency will keep up as he enters ACC play. As of right now, he's currently throwing at about a fantastic 10.6 yards per attempt. But, you know, as he gets into ACC play, or if he gets more attempts because, you know, he's playing from behind, could very well see the efficiency drop off a little bit, but still not enough for you to worry. Like, you'd have to see a huge drop off at this point not to reach, you know, 3,000 passing yards. Like, he seems like a lock for 3,000 passing yards at this point. And to me, that really makes him a must-add in six-point passing touchdown leagues. Like, he scored five through two games so far. Again, that's on pace for 30 touchdowns. I could see him, especially in ACC play, potentially getting to a point where he's needing to throw 3-4 touchdowns a game to keep things interesting. So, a guy in a very similar vein, though, is Dylan Lonergan, quarterback out of Boston College. Another guy that, you know, in the ACC, again, we're once again kind of picking on this conference, trying to find some good matchups here down the line. And Lonergan has been kind of a surprise with this Bill O'Brien offense. Like, I was never like a Bill O'Brien hater and everything. And I did always say that, you know, if Lonergan won this job, he would fit this system a lot better. He's looked really good the first couple of weeks, right? He's thrown four touchdowns in each of his games so far. Against one was against an FCS opponent. This past week against Michigan State was a huge test, and that game turned into a lot more of a shootout than I was really prepared for. He threw 45 times, completed 34 of them with 390 yards and four touchdowns. No rushing really at all, two rush attempts, 2 yards, so can't rely on that whatsoever, but very much similar to Mensa. This is just another quarterback that I think is going to provide a very nice, safe floor in the coming weeks because, one, Bill O'Brien's letting Lonergan rip it. He's got really good receiving weapons. Lewis Bonds looked really good so far this weekend. We'll talk about Jeremiah Franklin a little bit later. Like, they've got the weapons to move. Their backs are really good receivers, so I think Lonergan's in a really good spot to have some really nice matchups down the line in ACC play. He's absolutely worth a pickup in a lot of leagues. And then last quarterback here is Ethan Vasco. Again, a guy I'm not super excited to really tout here and everything, but again, he's had a really nice start to the season. 32.18 fantasy points versus, I can't remember who they faced week one. And then this past week against Jacksonville State, not as good, but 24.9 fantasy points. The rushing really helps in both of these. In the first game, he had 63 yards and a touchdown on the ground, had 22 rushing yards. The next game, he's playing in the CUSA. Just the upcoming schedule really just points to how favorable a dual threat quarterback could be in these next couple of games. He's got Bowling Green, he's got James Madison, he's got Old Dominion. All three of those are games you absolutely could play Vasco in. And then you just look at the rest of their schedule. Liberty, not a cakewalk per se, but, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to score. And so I think Vasco's in a really nice position there. Another guy that you can easily pick up right now and help out when it comes to, you know, making your quarterback room deep. So, all that being said, let's move on to our honorable mentions. Again, a lot of this is me repeating past names here, especially among the quarterbacks. But, you know, Brad Jackson, another great week this past week against UTSA, 30 fantasy points there. Anthony Calandria had a really nice week against UCLA. That was super impressive. Jake Retzlaff had himself a nice week against South Alabama. Nick Medicucci had a really nice game against Colorado. That was a very nice surprise there. And then, you know, Bo Pribula just absolutely on fire against Kansas. I think he'll end up being a really big start for PFF players down the line, especially with Mizzou having a decently favorable SEC schedule. So let me take a sip of my tea here real quick, and then we'll get right back to it. All right, we are revitalized. We are good to go. Talk about running backs here. As I kind of mentioned at the start of the article, like, the running backs this week definitely feel weaker compared to last week. And a lot of it, most of it really, has to do with me liking the what the player has done so far, but I don't know if like they'll be able to take that next step to be that workhorse player we really want in CFF. And that can be for a variety of reasons, whether, you know, I don't trust the talent or I don't trust the system. We'll get into that with each of these guys, but really the biggest case here is Jamari Taylor of Virginia. Like, Taylor came into Charlottesville during the offseason, one of the three major backs vying to lead this backfield, the other two being, you know, program veteran Xavier Brown, Wyoming transfer Harrison Whaley comes in. And we had seen the last couple of years that Tony Elliott and his staff's tendency has been to, you know, have a committee approach at running back. And given the fact that they seem to have three decent options for them, it was kind of assumed by most of the CFF community that we wouldn't really see anyone emerge and that we would be stuck in a committee once again. But here we are. Emerge Taylor has. And this past week, Taylor looked fantastic. He went 150 yards and three touchdowns on the ground on just 17 carries. He was a major reason why Virginia got the lead they did in this game. And as I kind of mentioned with Jet Thomas in the past, right, like, a performance like this should make Taylor a committee buster going forward, at least on paper, right? Like, but I still hesitate to say Elliott and his staff are ready to move off of that rotation preference they have at the position. Like, despite Taylor's performance, still to this point in the season, he's only had 36% of the team's rushing attempts. And so it'd be very easy for the staff to kind of relegate him back to limited touches, especially if they opt for the more, even more dreaded approach rather than just straight committee, is the hot hand approach, right? And if Taylor can't get it going early in some games, that could lead to a lot of really bad starts. But despite my negativity, right, I do think that we as CFF players, when we see a performance like this, we got to be willing to take some risk on guys like this early on in the season. We've seen it time and time again over the years that guys earn their workhorse status. This is very rare outside of guys that you're drafting, you know, in the top three, four rounds of drafts, that guys are just handed their workload, especially if they're not a returning starter. A lot of times they earn their role down the line. So you got to be willing to take shots on a guy like Jamari Taylor here who, you know, this is a flash in the pan. Maybe we have another couple weeks where his carries vary a little bit, but then, you know, second half of the season, maybe they start treating him more like a workhorse. We'll have to see. Again, it's less comfortable than the running backs I was throwing out last week, and I can repeat those to you guys again at the end of this. But for right now, let's move on to our second running back to discuss today, and that is Mr. Mekhi Frazier, the running back out of Michigan State. Another potential committee buster here might be coming. And he's a guy that I honestly considered last week because this is a Jonathan Smith system, and, you know, he was looking good last week, but I want to see one more week here, and here we go. You know, this Michigan State backfield was kind of hard to break down during the offseason because they didn't really have a lot coming back. Obviously, you know, Kyron Lynch Adams and, oh my goodness, I am blanking on the man's name. Let me go look at that up real quick. I can hear you guys screaming at me and telling me what the name is. Nate Carter, there it is. So like Cameron Lynch Adams, Nate Carter, they're both gone. Meanwhile, Brandon Tullis, Mekhi Frazier played half games last season. They were getting like a carry per game in the games that they did play. So a lot of people are kind of taking a look at, you know, true freshman Jace Clarizio to have a shot at this job in year one, but as we've seen so far, like, Frazier has denied that claim. Like, I do think this is a big deal because Jonathan Smith, especially during his days at Oregon State, not afraid to utilize a workhorse back at all. And as of now, Frazier's so far gotten 54.4% of non-QB rushing attempts with the Spartans this season. That's a really good sign, in my opinion, that he will continue to increase his workload down the line. And, you know, despite getting very limited run as a freshman, Frazier has looked like he's made a huge jump from last season. He's currently averaging almost 6 yards a carry. And, you know, while neither of his performances so far, you know, 81 yards this past week against Boston College, 103 yards the week before, I do think his performances are ones, you know, they're not ones that would make you win your weekly matchup, but they feel like very good floor plays at the running back position. Like, guys who average 80 to 100 yards a game and on average fall into the end zone at least once a game, like, those are the kind of guys that really provide a nice, good floor for you every single week. And, you know, the ultimate hope here is that Frazier can shake the likes of Brandon Tallis off his back so that he can monopolize more carries going forward and potentially get into that 20 touch per game range. As of now, though, again, like I said, Frazier feels like a guy you could feel comfortable plugging into your lineup during bye weeks with a little bit more upside down the line. But that upside is limited because, you know, Frazier is playing in the Big Ten and, you know, Michigan State, unfortunately, on the, you know, I'd say on the lower 50% in terms of the power ratings for the Big Ten, which tells me that, you know, there's not always going to be that running room that we want there to be for Frazier. But that being said, let's move on to our third running back here, and that is Mr. Tay Meadows, running back out of Troy. Another guy that I was thinking about adding as an official play last week. I definitely mentioned him as an honorable mention. But I did leave him off as an official waiver play last week, mostly due to the fact that he was about to face Clemson in week two. And, you know, I wasn't comfortable, especially week one, I wasn't fully comfortable throwing out guys that were immediately about to be hit with a tough matchup, especially when I was trying to narrow down exactly who was going to be, you know, a part of the waiver list. But regardless, Meadows proceeded to perform in that Clemson game in a way that makes me feel even more comfortable recommending him this week. Like, with Trey Cooley unfortunately done for the season and, you know, John Lovett having a case of suckitis, the path was pretty open for Meadows to become the RB1 here, especially with him being with the Trojans the last 3 years. Like, he's now getting his chance, and take that chance, he absolutely did. He was already impressive in the opening game against Nichols, ripping off 186 yards and a touchdown. And what really impressed me is his stat line against Clemson. Like to be clear, this wasn't a weak winning stat line or anything, but if you tell me that a first year starting running back for a Sun Belt team is able to run for 76 yards against Clemson on the road, consider me impressed, right? And based on what we've seen so far, it's pretty clear that Meadows will be the volume pig, TM, shout out Justin Leo, for Troy this season. Like, that is very clear. He is currently averaging 19 carries a game. He has almost 70% of non-quarterback rush attempts for the Trojans. Lovett's already an afterthought. He's only had 12 carries to this point, and he's been a liability in the rushing department. He averages less than 3 yards a carry. Meanwhile, Meadows is over 6 yards a carry. He is prepared to run wild in the Sun Belt, and I would consider him personally the safest investment among the in-depth running backs that I am talking about here today. So I would make Meadows a priority on the waiver wire this week. Let's keep it rolling here. We got two other running backs we'll go semi in deep here. The next guy I want to discuss here is a guy that, you know, some people are taking at the end of drafts and everything like that, but I feel like he's got some room in leagues where people can go pick him up. And that is Cam Edwards, the running back out of UConn. You know, a little bit like Jim Bora has very annoyingly, despite the fact that he's had some pretty good backs like Darrell Robinson and Cam Edwards as well, he very much insists on a committee approach. And it can be very, very frustrating, even though you know that a guy's good, they just can't seem to find it in their hearts to be able to make them workhorse backs. And unfortunately, it looked like to start the season, when UConn played in week one, Cam Edwards had 6 carries for 115 yards and a touchdown. Now, granted, you know, when your guy's performing that well and you're facing an opponent that you're about to beat soundly, there's no reason to keep running him out there and risk injury. But we did get a much better glimpse this past week about what UConn plans to do when they actually need a play to happen. Cam Edwards went from 6 carries in week one to 21 this past week. Why? Because UConn was very upset-minded against Syracuse. They jumped out on the orange early, and from there, they went and relied on their two biggest weapons, one being Skylar Bell. I'll talk about him during the honorable mentions of the wide receiver room, and also Cam Edwards. I pray and hope to God this says what I think it's going to say about the treatment that Cam Edwards is going to get down the line. I hope that this is the year that they finally let Edwards run wild. Too much of this committee situation the last couple of years. And then if you look at UConn's schedule, usually you look at UConn's schedule and you kind of want to throw up a little bit because it feels like there's a lot of bad matchups on there. Listen to the schedule for here on out for UConn. At Delaware, Ball State, at Buffalo, FIU, at Boston College, at Rice, UAB, Duke, Air Force, FAU. Really, outside of those two ACC matchups, you're feeling great about starting UConn players in all of those. And even then, again, we just saw UConn put up 20 points against Syracuse. Why can't they potentially do the same versus Duke and Boston College? So I'm going to pick up Edwards, see how he plays over the next couple of weeks here against Delaware and Ball State. If we still get the same crap of, like, you know, he has 21 carries 1 week and then 5 carries the next week and then 12 the next week, you can drop him pretty quickly. But this is another guy that I'm willing to invest in and just see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks, because he could end up being a huge volume piece going forward if that Syracuse game is any indication. So last running back I want to discuss here is Mr. Bill Davis, running back out of Louisiana. A guy that's kind of flying under the radar just a little bit, but had a really nice performance this past week. 19 carries, 132 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Also had a catch for 6 yards. There was a pretty big switch up with the Raging Cajuns this week because, unfortunately, Walker Howard, their starting quarterback coming into the year, he is now down for 6 to 8 weeks. And we saw this past week against McNeese State, Louisiana is changing up their approach in a big way. It seems like there's going to be a much healthier and heavier reliance on the running game for the Cajuns. Bill Davis, very much like Cam Edwards, saw a pretty big increase in volume here. He went from 11 attempts the week before to now this past week, 19 attempts. And like I said, the 132 yards and 2 touchdowns. Very much involved there. And the other reason, so again, they lose Walker Howard, which already, you know, hampers your passing game a little bit. But then Daniel Beal, the quarterback that they brought in, the backup here, against McNeese State, a FCS team, threw for 3.9 yards per attempt. The passing was atrocious. He had 86 yards on the day on 22 attempts. Just non-existent passing. The only way that the Raging Cajuns are going to be doing anything right now, as long as Beal is back there, is running the ball. Bill Davis will be a big part of that. He's a big boy playing in the Sun Belt. And so I think he's got some really good matchups. I mean, obviously don't play him against Mizzou this week. I don't like that at all. But then you have two of potentially the worst G5 programs in the country between, you know, Eastern Michigan, who just lost to the Landsharks, and Marshall, who, again, obviously they lost this week. They got destroyed by Georgia week one. Like, they're not a team that's going to be doing anything this year. They got a lot to figure out. So I think Raging Cajuns have a really nice schedule coming up after they get done with their date with Mizzou this week. So I like Bill Davis as a very sneaky play. I doubt a lot of people will really be going after him on the waiver wire. Let's talk about some honorable mentions of running back. Again, this I'm just naming my 5 guys I talked about last week. I'm still on Miles Montgomery. Didn't have a great performance this past week, but, you know, still, you know, 67 yards on very limited attempts. So I think he'll still be great once they actually, you know, get away from playing FCS teams. Rashad DeBinion, another 25-plus touch game this week. Almost 200 yards. Dude's phenomenal. Javon Jackson had himself another good week. Not as efficient as the week before, but still very good if you played him. Lucky Sutton didn't find the end zone, but still 15 attempts for 88 yards. He'll be fine moving forward. Dominic Richardson out of Tulsa, another 20 rush attempt game here. Add some additional receiving, which is always nice. And then some other honorable mentions I'm just kind of throwing out there. Again, like I said, I don't really trust a lot of what I'm seeing with running backs this week in terms of the newer names. But I will throw out there Jeremiah Cobb, who is currently the RB1 for Auburn with Damari Alston down. And Cobb's really taken advantage of this opportunity, man. Like, he had, you know, 16 attempts for 74 yards and a touchdown versus Baylor, which is already pretty great. And then this past week against Ball State, 121 yards and two touchdowns on 11 attempts. That's the kind of performance that is going to make Auburn question, you know, when Alston comes back, if Cobb's still performing that well down the stretch, like, are they going to give Alston back his job? Or are they going to continue riding on Cobb? We'll have to see. Javon Ducker, running back out of Temple. I already said they don't really trust Temple's offense, but boy, I mean, I can't deny what we're seeing with Ducker here. You know, an 87-yard game, 128-yard game, one touchdown between the two games. Like, he's looked pretty solid so far, but once again, they're facing FCS opponent, they're facing UMass. It's a little difficult to really tell how that's going to translate into conference play, but I'm throwing him out here regardless. And then Seth McGowan, running back out of Kentucky, formerly of New Mexico State. Shout out Mitch Hart on this one. I really thought McGowan was going to end up being like an RB4 for Kentucky this year, but no, he's been right there with Dante Dowdle in terms of the rushing department, in terms of the rush share. Granted, Dowdle's been a little bit more efficient. Granted, a lot of that came on one run in game one. But McGowan had himself a really nice game this past weekend. 15 rush attempts, 93 yards, two touchdowns. You know, he's averaging 16.5 rush attempts per game. Not great volume, but given the way he's performed so far, I do think that is something to keep an eye on. So, all right. Let's move on to wide receivers. Again, a lot to unpack with wide receivers this week. Again, five brand new names that all look great. It's, again, like I said, if you're struggling at wide receiver, it's hard not to love the waiver market that is out there right now. So let me go ahead and take a sip of my tea. And let's keep it going. So we'll start with Hank Beattie. Beattie? Not entirely sure. Probably should have looked that up. Totally fine. I love playing whack-a-mole when it comes to CFF. I love playing whack-a-mole when trying to figure out which wide receiver to draft slash pick up in a system we know likes to produce with them. And with Illinois here, you know, we were in on West Virginia transfer Hudson Clement most of the offseason. Then as the season got closer, it was said that Clement may not start. So we pivoted over to Colin Dixon, another guy on the outside. He had some hype going in to the season. You know, like I said, he played on the outside where Barry Lenny Jr. typically prefers his wide receiver one. So of course, now the season is here. It's the slot wide receiver, Hank Beattie, that is emerging as the favorite for Luke Altmyer and this group. Again, I admittedly wrote off Beattie last week at first, despite his big week one performance. Like, as I mentioned, a slot wide receiver doesn't typically see wide receiver one treatment in Lenny Jr.'s system. In addition, Beattie was a full-time starter last year and only saw 29 targets. I kind of figured that he was in for that treatment once again this year. But instead, he's taking full advantage of the fact that he is the veteran option in this squad and has the most chemistry with Luke Altmyer. And in addition, like, he's kind of the opposite of what you typically see in a slot wide receiver, right? Usually, slot wide receivers, especially in CFF, you know, high volume, low efficiency plays, perfect for PPR formats. But, you know, Beattie's currently only seeing 7 targets a game, a good but not great volume, and he's averaging almost 18.2 yards per catch. Like, that's insane for a slot receiver, very much not being used in a traditional way there at all out of the slot. You know, given how good Illinois looks so far, I think it's very easy to see that Beattie could become a weekly option for CFF leagues, much in the same way that Pat Bryant was last season. Again, throw the system out here. I think Beattie's your clear number one wide receiver for Illinois, and given what we've seen with Lenny Jr. in the past, he's a must-own at this point, and a very favorable schedule coming up. West Virginia, Indiana, USC, lots of opportunity for Beattie coming up. Let's move on to our second wide receiver. Let's talk about Kenny Odom, the wide receiver out of UTEP. I really do think we should have been paying more attention to Kenny Odom this offseason, right? Like, he was off to a nice start in 2024. Like, at one point, he was a top 20 wide receiver in fantasy points per game in 2024. But, you know, nagging injuries kind of caused him to miss entire games. Or in games that he didn't play, he'd be extremely limited, leading to a very pedestrian wide receiver 66 finish at the end of the season. But within those performances were two top 10 weekly finishes at the wide receiver position that really hinted at the fact that Odom, his upside was absolutely there to be in another year. And based on what we've seen through 2 weeks, he is well on his way to reaching that potential this year. Like, in two games, Odom has put up two great performances. In total, we got 23 targets, 14 catches, 221 yards, and two touchdowns. Both weeks, he hit above 20 fantasy points in half PPR formats. In full PPR formats, he's playing even better than that. With Malachi Nelson at the helm, which, by the way, Nelson looks by far the healthiest he's been in college. Like, Odom has a solid quarterback to distribute the ball to him and keep him fed most weeks. Like, UTEP, you know, they got a rough date this week against Texas, but, you know, if they get through that, you know, unscathed, and, you know, Odom's healthy, which, again, not always a given his history, but, you know, if they make it through that, like, he has a smooth schedule filled with CUSA defenses, his soft out-of-conference matchups as far as the eye can see. I really think Odom's going to continue to be a big part of that UTEP offense. I think Malachi Nelson likes having that clear number one wide receiver that he can pepper and feed. Given what we saw in the last couple of weeks, I think Odom's well on his way to a really solid season for CFF. Definitely worth a pickup. Next page here, I'm cheating a little bit. I'm going to throw two wide receivers at you, mostly because they are quite literally on the same team. And that is the Mississippi State wide receivers, Brendan Thompson and Anthony Evans. I feel like I was spending more time looking at this dang Mississippi State wide receiver room for CFF production than really anybody else this offseason. I mean, I knew Levy could produce top 25 wide receivers like Drake Stoops and Kevin Coleman last year. Like, but like this offseason, God, it was agonizing trying to figure out which piece between these two was going to be worth grabbing between Brendan Thompson and Anthony Evans. Like, Thompson was the hype candidate, right? Plenty of good practice reports, a familiarity with the system from both, you know, him and Levy being at Oklahoma. He also was the wide receiver that was invited to represent Mississippi State SEC Media Days. There was a lot pointing to the fact that Thompson was going to be a big part of this offense. Evans, meanwhile, was the system player, right? Like, Levy has favored the slot in recent years. And add in that Levy was Evans' favorite coach coming out of high school, there was reason to believe in Evans too. And, you know, the good news is, of all this, and I love when this happens, we got the best answer possible. And that is both. Both of these guys are absolutely worth adding to your CFF teams. And while, like, this section, I would say, like, if you're going to add one guy, go with Brendan Thompson. As he's been the more productive of the two. But like I said, both are worth pickups in all leagues. Thompson's looked great. He scored 225 yards and two touchdowns on 17 targets in his first two games. Thompson's very much the high-efficiency deep threat in this offense. Doesn't need elite volume to have great days, which is very valuable in, like, standard formats. Meanwhile, Evans was a little slow coming out of the gate versus Southern Miss. But, you know, this past week, 14 targets, 9 receptions, 108 yards, and a touchdown against Arizona State. Like, it's clear, based on what we saw last week, when the going gets tough and Blake Shapen and Mississippi State need a play, they will be looking for one of two, maybe three if you count Traore, guys downfield, right? Which is fantastic for CFF. We love systems like this where you get the targets just get funneled to just a couple of different guys, especially one that throws this much. Like, Mississippi State's not done playing in shootouts or playing from behind, so I fully expect that both Thompson and Evans to continuously get work down the stretch and potentially become weekly starters for CFF. I would absolutely pick up both of these guys in a league. If you're in a league with me, more than likely, they're already on my roster, so good luck. Let's move on to our fourth wide receiver option here, and that is Mr. Justice Ross Simmons, the wide receiver out of Syracuse. This past week, 10 targets, 5 receptions, 83 yards, and 2 touchdowns. As of right now, chalk one up to the summer school series by Bud Elliott. A lot of us during the offseason were looking at two different areas. You know, Daryl Gill, who's super efficient last year, still super efficient this year, but very much still kind of relegated into that deep threat role. Not a guy that seems like is going to step up and be the clear wide receiver one for Syracuse. Jonte Cook was a guy that I was investing in a lot and, you know, looks solid, but he's been kind of inefficient. He's been banged up. It's not entirely sure whether or not he's going to be able to recover from that. Meanwhile, Justice Ross Simmons is taking advantage of this opportunity early on. He currently ties Syracuse in terms of the number of targets. His efficiency has been great, 16.6 yards per catch. His ADOT is the best on the team outside of Daryl Gill, right? Like, he's running 2.02 yards per route run, the second best among the starting five wide receivers here. There's a lot pointing to the fact that Simmons is currently performing the best among the three major options that we're looking at for the wide receivers, and I do think that is potentially going to continue. Like, we just saw Jackson Meeks be productive in that outside role for Syracuse last year. It looks like Ross Simmons is set to become that guy for Syracuse, so I'm willing to pick him up. He's got an FCS opponent this week. Again, some crazy variants can happen there. He's got Clemson after that, but then afterwards, Syracuse's schedule gets a whole lot easier. Hopefully those win sprints they ran in after the game this past week really kind of get them in shape so that they're not having to struggle win against, you know, the likes of UConn the rest of the season. But for right now, I would absolutely go out and grab Justice Ross Simmons, especially if you drafted Daryl Gill. Like, go ahead and grab Ross Simmons. Get the wide receiver from Syracuse that you were basically looking for with that Gill pick, but now you're just going to pivot to Ross Simmons. So, last wide receiver I really want to touch on here is a guy that I, again, maybe this is my hubris speaking, but I really don't think a lot of people are going to be talking about him this week because this is not a game that really people are paying attention to at all. But I want to talk about Donovan Fappell, the wide receiver out of New Mexico State. And you guys might be sitting here being like, Jared, what in the heck are you talking about a New Mexico State wide receiver? Why are we even discussing this? One, he's performed pretty solid the first couple of weeks here, right? He's got 18 targets, 13 catches, you know, 177 yards and a touchdown, which, you know, aren't mind-blowing numbers, but a really solid start to the season. But here is the more important thing. David Yost. David Yost is the offensive coordinator for New Mexico State this year. Before that, he was the offensive coordinator for Florida International. And if you have seen anything over the last couple of years, David Yost loves himself an outside wide receiver that he can take really nice, efficient deep shots to. And I think he might have found his guy here with Donovan Fappell. For those that need a refresher on some of the beautiful CFF performances we've gotten because of David Yost the last couple of years, Eric Rivers last year, you know, finishing top 10, 97 targets, 1,166 yards, 12 touchdowns. The year before that, Chris Mitchell, 100 targets, you know, 64 catches, 1,118 yards and 7 touchdowns. The year before that, Tyrese Chambers got 85 targets. And then you go back to Yost's time as the offensive coordinator for Texas Tech, and Eric Ezukanma, during his best seasons, was getting absolutely fed. He has 72 targets in 10 games during that time as well, and almost hit 1,000 yards if he had played all 12 games there. So, like, Yost, again, looks for these outside wide receivers, loves to feed them. And given the fact that Fappell has averaged 9 targets in the first 2 games here, I think it's only really a matter of time before we really see Fappell become a go-to guy for this offense. Again, you got New Mexico State, they're playing an FCS CUSA, excuse me. And, like, I just want to look at their schedule again real quick. But again, their upcoming schedule is super weak here, right? You got LA Tech, you got a bye, and then New Mexico. Then after that, Sam Houston, Liberty, Missouri State, Western Kentucky, Kennesaw State, Tennessee, not great, but, you know, then you finish up with UTEP and Middle Tennessee State. I see a lot of opportunity for Fappell, especially if he does, you know, get better as the season goes along. Logan Fife really does see him as a go-to guy. There's a lot of scoring opportunities in that schedule down the line. And so this is kind of my pick for this week, my under-the-radar pick for you guys. But with that being said, there's so many other guys you can go with as well. Again, I can run through the guys that we talked about last week. Chase Hendricks, another great week this week. 9 targets, 8 receptions, 121 yards, and a touchdown. Malachi Toney, you know, 7 targets, 6 receptions, 80 yards, no touchdowns, but still very solid volume. Miles Davis continues to be a cheat code at the wide receiver position. You know, 10 rushing attempts, 50 yards. He also had 3 catches for 9 yards and 2 touchdowns. So playing a running back in the wide receiver spot, very, very nice. Bo Sparks, after a lot of us were kind of worried that he wasn't going to continue to get the volume, shut us all up. 10 targets, 5 receptions, 155 yards, and a touchdown in the game against UTSA there. So Sparks, I think he's actually the wide receiver one right now for CFF. We'll see if that holds up down the line, but he's definitely helping himself out a lot. And then one guy I want to add this week as an honorable mention is Brady Boyd. 21 targets, 9 catches, you know, just over 100 yards. Like, Utah State, they're still figuring things out, but again, the fact that Utah State went to Brady Boyd this much against an FCS opponent, you know, 12 targets, 6 catches, 86 yards, tells me that down the line, Brady Boyd could end up being a big piece of that Utah State offense. So I'll throw him out there. And then again, we'll continue to run through this here. Lewis Bond, another great day for him. 15 targets, 11 catches, 90 yards. No touchdowns, but a PPR monster. Mario Craver, only 6 targets this week, but another 100-yard performance and a touchdown. He looks great for the Aggies. Romello Brinson. Can't find his stats from this week, but I do know he scored 2 touchdowns. And very much continues to look like the wide receiver one for SMU, although I do think his volume is a little light. Otherwise, I probably would have made him an official play this week. But Cameron Ross out of Virginia, another 9 target performance. Definitely not what we saw last week. You know, last week he had 9 targets for 124 yards and a touchdown. This week, 9 targets, 5 catches, 40 yards. Hopefully we get a bounce back week. As long as he keeps getting that volume, he should be fine. Jaden Barnes, once again, looked good for Appalachia State. 11 targets, 8 catches, 71 yards, and a touchdown. Corey Milliner out of UAB, another good performance. 11 targets, 6 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. Iverson Hooks, a little lower volume this week, but still pretty much the same production. 4 catches, 72 yards, and a touchdown. Jaquan Gibson out of UMass continues to be a PPR play. 11 targets, 7 catches, 89 yards, no touchdowns. But also got some rushing attempts. 3 rushing attempts for 11 yards. You like to see that as well. But again, once again, Gibson, great PPR play. Don't know if I love him for standard because I just don't see them scoring a lot of points. Chris Durr out of Wyoming, another good performance. 6 targets, 4 receptions, 54 yards, and a touchdown. Again, I definitely think he'll come back down compared to that week one performance. But, you know, as long as they're looking for him in the red zone every single week, you got to love it. Omega Blake, the wide receiver out of Arkansas, another good performance here. 7 targets, 5 catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown. Skylar Bell, I mentioned it earlier, like UConn in this game against Syracuse really tipped the hat of who they're going to go to when they really need to play. I mentioned that, you know, Cam Edwards' volume shot up from 6 catches or 6 runs to 21 rush attempts. Skylar Bell saw his targets go from 5 to 17 in this game, and he looked good. 11 catches, 105 yards, no touchdowns in this game, unfortunately. But regardless, like, UConn really tipping their hand that when the going gets tough and they really need to play, Bell is going to be huge down the line for them. Keyshawn Singleton, another good performance, but still, again, don't love the low volume we're seeing. He had 4 targets, 2 catches, 75 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, as long as he's super efficient, that's great, but I would really like that volume to pop up a little bit more. I'll throw Carl Chester out here again, wide receiver out of Southern Miss. Disappointing performance, although he did have 1 touchdown call back. But again, he continues to be the number one wide receiver for Southern Miss. It is a Blake Anderson offense. Once they really kind of get things going, I do think Chester will be big down the line. He's currently averaging 8.5 targets per game. I think that that'll be bigger down the line. And then Harrison Wallace, man. Again, us Deshaun Stripling fans not looking so hot right now. Wallace eating his lunch. He is currently at 147 yards receiving so far, averaging well over 20 yards per catch. Like, dude's just absolutely on fire, very much feeling like what Trell Harris was last year, just really without the touchdowns, because Wallace only has 1 touchdown to this point. But as I say that, he'll probably score 3 touchdowns this weekend just to spite me. So again, lots of waiver wire wide receivers for you guys to go get. I have no clue how many of them are still available in your leagues, because again, I don't have the roster percentages right now, but again, there's so many great options. Let's hit up tight end real quick. Again, we're going to discuss three guys here. No honorable mentions for tight ends this week, because I didn't really think there was a ton of great options. But one that we have to talk about is Dan Vellauri, tight end out of Syracuse. Last couple of years, Aronde Gadsden was such a fun deal for us in the college fantasy community because he very much was a Tito. For those that don't know what that means, that is a Eric Froton special. It means tight end in title only. This happens a lot in CFF where you specifically see it with tight ends who are kind of that tight end wide receiver hybrid. And like a lot of times, like they start out as a tight end because they're kind of a tweener. They get split out to the slot or even the outside quite a bit. And a lot of times they'll move full time to receiver, but don't lose that tight end eligibility on Fantrax. And then when you go and look at their snap share, they're less than 10% in line. And that just really shows you they're not a tight end anymore, but you know, Fantrax still allows it. They've been a bit better about that in recent years, but even still, like the way that Gadsden was used the last couple of years really kind of led us to believe that he was a very unique piece of this Orange offense the last couple of years, and that replacing him at tight end would not only not come easy, but many of us expected Syracuse to not even really try to replace, you know, Gadsden. But, you know, through a couple of weeks now, Dan Vellauri, the former quarterback versus tight end, has really made us eat our preconceptions the first couple of weeks, right? Like, while many of us were debating on, like, which wide receiver to draft for the Orange this year, Vellauri flew under the radar a ton. Now, through two games, he leads the Orange in targets, receptions, and yards. The only thing he needs, really, is touchdowns, and you have to imagine those will come with time. I'm not sure how long he'll lead those categories for the Orange, especially, like I said, with Justice Ross Simmons emerging here. But to me, it's very crystal clear that Vellauri is an athlete that Syracuse wants to use over and over again across the middle of the field, very much replacing what Gadsden was last year. Right now, Vellauri is a top 12 tight end for CFF 2025 through 2 weeks here. But unlike many of the people who are also in that top 12 range, we believe, that Vellauri has the weekly volume and role in this offense to not only stay there, but I think he could ascend into potential elite CFF tight end territory here. Like Vellauri, if you're struggling at tight end, if he's available in your league right now, he is a must add. I think there's a huge upside with Vellauri down the stretch here. I'll go through the last two tight ends here pretty quickly. Again, I'm not as excited about these guys compared to what I saw last week, but Jeremiah Franklin, out of the tight end out of Boston College, has looked really good. I know me and like Ethan Sowers and a lot of guys were excited about Ty Lockwood, but Jeremiah Franklin ain't giving up the job that easy. He's got 18 targets through two games, 154 total yards on 13 catches. He's got a touchdown to go with it last week. A really nice performance for Franklin in Boston College. He's one of those weapons that I mentioned earlier. He's going to help Dylan Lonergan week to week. Given the fact that he has seen 6+ targets in both those games, you got to take the shot on tight end here for Franklin. And then the last tight end that I want to discuss here is Jaron Canuck, the former defensive player turned tight end for Oklahoma. You know, stat sheet's not going to blow you away. He's had 6 targets in each of Oklahoma's games so far, 69 and 90 yards in his 2 games. Hasn't found the end zone yet, but again, very similar to Vellauri. If you're going to get 6 targets every single game for an offense like Oklahoma, Ben Arbuckle's offense, and you got some nice, softer matchups coming up here, I think it's a matter of time before Canuck finds the end zone. He should be a solid play in the next couple of weeks. So, all right. Man, my voice is tired, but we got through it. And one of these days, I'm going to get this waiver show down to just about an hour. It'll probably come as we get further into the season. There's less for me to have to explain. But yeah, with that, we've come to the end of our show. Appreciate you guys for listening. I hope these week two waivers help you guys a lot. And if they do help you, make sure that if you have not already, leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you could think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here on, well, I'll see you guys Tuesday night, but if you're just listening to the podcast form, we'll see you guys back here next Monday. And we will be discussing the week 3 reactions and waiver wires. But y'all should definitely check out that Tuesday night live stream. It's a good time. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.